This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim and Shazana Mukta in the studio this morning. Right now we're talking about cryptocurrency.
That's right, because earlier this week on Tuesday, some hackers pulled off the biggest ever cryptocurrency heist, stealing a $613 million in digital coins from token swapping platform Poly Network. Now, they actually returned some of that money. They returned $260 million worth of tokens less than 24 hours later, and they published a three-page long Q&A session on one of the blockchains, essentially in the form of a self-interview, saying that they've always planned to return the tokens and they just wanted to highlight the vulnerabilities in Poly Network software.
Nonetheless, questions have now arisen regarding the safety of cryptocurrency and, the more importantly, the supporting platforms that underlie the system. For whether this impacts mainstream adoption, we're speaking with Varun Mittal, global emerging markets fintech leader over at EY. Varun, good morning. Always a pleasure having you on the show. Maybe you can give us a bit of context here. Help us understand the context of this theft. And do we know how it occurred on the token swapping platform Poly Network? Is there any context you can provide here?
Absolutely. Some of the security researchers have already published their hypothesis on how it happened. Of course, the formal investigation, formal rebuttal from the host chain will come later. But what security researchers are saying is there were specific ways the implementation of the code happened, where a potential hacker could fake their entry in a simplistic way. By manipulating the code, they could fake their entry and get access to the system and steal the money. So think of it, if I map it to a banking context, that there were weaknesses in the way how somebody could enter and credentialize themselves to a bank account and use that way to steal the money. So it's not that the bank's lockers or the buildings were compromised, but there was a software level issue which some people misused to steal money.
What impact does this theft have on the industry? Perhaps maybe we'll see more tightening of regulations?
There's a two parts to this, right? One part is whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So one side of the thing is there will be more audits, more checks, and more, and we may actually have something like bug bounty programs. All the large tech firms, as you would know, they have these competitions for ethical hackers to attack. And if they can show vulnerability, they get some rewards. So one thing which it could trigger a lot of it would be something like that. On the regulations front, the premise is a lot of these so-called platforms, they say that they're decentralized finance, DeFi, and they are working across the borders. There is not one country which is having a single jurisdiction over them. And the premise is regulators in each of these markets are already telling people that please be cautious of where you are putting your money, and they are issuing advisories. Bank Negara has issued several of those advisories. So if people go and say, no, I still want to go and do this, and then something bad happens, unfortunately, it's unlikely that they go to a local police station and say, I lost my money, go find those people and recover my money. The answer from a regulations is, we told you, here are the regulated institutions. You decided to go to other institutions which are outside the regulatory jurisdiction, then we're sorry about it, but bad luck.
Yeah, which is the kind of situation we see here in Malaysia, right? There are only three regulated digital asset exchanges, and that are basically regulated by the Securities Commission. But Varun, we take a look at this particular point, right? The regulation point. Are countries at risk of maybe losing out on this potential growth if they over-regulate it? Because there are going to be countries that are going to embrace this with open arms and maybe attract capital there in one way or another, at least in the long term. Any thoughts on who could be potential winners and losers in the long term here?
So I'll give an analogy. In some countries, in some provinces, marijuana is legal. In others, it is not. It's for the country and the society to decide what is right or wrong. Some people say, oh, cannabis tech is the big thing. There are companies with several $100 million valuation in some parts of Northern America and some provinces in the United States. So the premise is this: not all growth is always good. Sometimes controlled, sustainable growth is good. However, you may have some jurisdictions who may say that it's fine. We will embrace it. So you have some country coming up saying we will accept one specific digital token or cryptocurrency as a legal tender, but it's a small economy and they were their currency was pegged to other currencies where it was getting devalued. So it's right for them. So the way I would look at it is this, there is no blanket answers for some countries or some jurisdictions. It may be right. But for others, it may not be because it could create much bigger systemic effects in those markets. So each country will decide what is right for them. P2P lending was banned in its traditional shape and form in several East Asian countries, but it still continues in some other countries at a much smaller scale. So there is no blanket, this is good or bad. Some people would say we want to embrace it. Yes, it comes with everything comes with its pros and cons. We are okay with those cons.
Varun, I'm wondering what kind of effect this incident will have on the take up of crypto transactions. I mean, the hackers claimed that they were just doing this for fun and they wanted to expose vulnerabilities. So it does seem to show a shortcoming or some kind of flaw in the system. Do you think this will affect crypto's mainstream adoption?
See, the way I look at it is I won't speak specifically to their motive. But from an adoption perspective, if I look at a cryptocurrency getting hacked five years ago in Japan, I only saw adoption increase from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Will there be because see, people's memories are not as big or deep per se. Things and people move on. There could be a short-term blip. Per se, but if you look at it, there was no global meltdown that all across the board cryptocurrency markets crashed 10-20% overnight. None of that happened, right? Because the question is like, as part of the overall market, how big it is and how many actual customers were impacted. So I do not see a very big sea change that, okay, this happened and now the whole world changes.
Well, I know Singapore is proposing an omnibus act to regulate the crypto industry. In light of this theft and, you know, security vulnerabilities, how would this act or what do you propose it could do to provide more protection for residents when they invest in cryptos traded on platforms registered outside Singapore?
So, yeah, so slight clarification. So the omnibus act doesn't cover only crypto. Digital assets is one, and why it say omnibus. Because today what happens with the digital assets is a lot of them fall into too many different territories. Singapore has Payments Act, which covers payment tokens. It has a Digital Tokens Act, which covers other territories. A Security and Future Act, which covers security tokens. And there was need to do a benchmarking of the regulatory requirements, fit and proper compliance, what does a prohibitionary order mean? Because there was a scenario that people could try to take arbitrage of classification or try to create something which is on the edge of one or two or have attributes of two and try to take a lower benchmark. So which is why to clear any of those ambiguities and also to put it at the same footing, because a lot of crypto players say, oh, we are decentralized finance. Oh, we are digital nomad. We are across all digital borders. And which is why if you see even the United States is exploring coming up a regulation that, okay, if you are involved in trade of it, if you're not the issuer, but you're not the seller, but you are the marketplace, then also you have some responsibility. Because a lot of crypto industry is built on the lines of plausible deniability where everybody says it's not my responsibility. And from a regulator says, okay, if none of you is responsible, then we have to put the responsibility, then we have to put it on everybody. Either there is a proper people to take responsibility, but if nobody wants to take it and there is no way to protect the end consumers, we'll put the responsibility on everybody. And so, that one is also still in consultation phase. It's still far from being a full law.
Yeah, right. So on that note, right, Varun, we saw the U.S. Senate pass that $1 trillion infrastructure bill, which includes vague new tax reporting requirements for cryptocurrency brokers and transactions. Does this mean the U.S. government has come to accept that that crypto is here to stay? And will it be, in fact, part of the mainstream economy?
The premise is the way I would say is some parts of crypto, for example, you using your airline miles to which are technically a digital token to buy something other than an airline seat that has existed for 20, 30, 40 years. Your loyalty points of different shapes and forms have existed. So the idea to look at is this is now people are trading some of these. A lot of digital assets have been poured, whether it's basketball cards and stuff. And there is economic activity happening on digital tokens, which is of a certain credible scale. So the rest of the, I have to say, the economic laws, whether it's tax reporting, regulatory reporting, should also cover the ambit. Because tomorrow, imagine if people start to trade in cows and they're digital cows, probably the government will not start to regulate it on day one, because if it's too small, too niche, it crosses a certain threshold, then they have to be governed by the full set of economic laws and activities.
Right, Varun, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Varun Mittal, Global Emerging Markets FinTech Leader with EY, giving us a bit of context, especially to what happened with the whole, with the hack there, with the, what was it again, Poly Network, and kind of also what this means going forward in terms of mainstream adoption, and a lot of context in terms of, it's basically down to each country and what's right for them. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.